today, Nancy and I celebrate 40 years of marriage. I'll give you some tips for a successful marriage today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
40 years. Amazing. 40 years of marriage. I said to Nancy yesterday, can you believe it, hon? 40 years. We met at 19. And you know what she said? She said, I still feel like I'm 19. Yeah, same here. What a joy. What an amazing journey it's been. And what great expectation and excitement for the future. There's obviously a whole lot to talk about today. Thanks for all the kind anniversary greetings. If you're on Facebook or Twitter, you would have seen and connected with me. You would have seen the post of our wedding picture. Yeah, goes back a while, 1976, March 14th. And then 2 days from now, Wednesday, turned 61 years old. So it's always a special time of the year for us. But a little while, I want to give a tribute to my bride, one that I can give publicly. There are things, obviously, with love that you express only in private and say things to one another. But there are other things to honor one another and express love publicly. I'm going to do that. Matt, you were born in 76. Man, isn't that amazing? Well, what month were you born? I forget when your birthday was. So, listen, here's what I want to do today. I know there's a credible amount of stuff to talk about in the political world, as always. Very, very intense, volatile weekend. I spoke at a rally for Senator Cruz at the drag strip, the Charlotte Motor Speedway drag strip. Several thousand people were there, and that was amazing. It was thunderstorms predicted all day. It was raining heavily in the morning. It was raining when I got there. Hundreds had shown up already, but we didn't know what to expect. And as Pastor Mark Harris was opening in prayer, the sun just came out. I mean, here you are praying with your eyes closed. It's like, what's that? The sun came out. It was a beautiful sunny afternoon. So that was very sweet. People were coming out in the rain anyhow, but that was very sweet. But here's what I want to do today. I want to get your input as well. 866-348-7884. 866-34-TRUTH. In your view, what are keys to a successful marriage? If you had to name one or two. Now, maybe you've had an amazing marriage for 50 years. Maybe you've been married 15 years but went through hell and now are doing great. So from the viewpoint of success, from the viewpoint of blessing, from the viewpoint of doing well, what would you say? Maybe you're a marriage counselor. Maybe you're a pastor or leader. But really out of your own experience as well as a married person, what would you say are the number one keys to a happy and blessed marriage before God? 866-348-7884. All right, Matt, so Nancy and I have been married longer than you existed as a human being. What do you think of that? Sorry. You're in the womb. You were in the womb as a human being, but you made your appearance. We were married a couple months before you made your appearance. Let me just throw out these brief comments, but this is not going to be the main subject of this first hour. As far as the protests at the Donald Trump meetings, rally Friday day and then Friday night, the one that he canceled, number one, anyone trying to do harm to Donald Trump or to anyone at his rally is dead wrong, period. There's no justification, period. Number two, we know clearly that the large protests in Chicago were motivated, organized by groups like MoveOn.org. In other words, the radical left. And that radical left hates me, hates you, hates Ted Cruz, the same as it hates Donald Trump. Number three, Donald Trump's rhetoric has been irresponsible and incendiary and is provoking an angry, violent climate. I began warning about this last August, friends. I'm not a Johnny-come-lately on this. There's a reason. Check out my latest article for more.
The
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. What are key ingredients for happy and blessed marriage? 866-348-7884. What, in your viewpoint, are keys for a happy, blessed, successful marriage? By the way, tomorrow we're going to have on the air Ted Baer. He has reviewed movies from a Christian perspective for decades, and he's going to be talking to us about the Young Messiah movie and how that ties in with the Bible or how it doesn't tie in with the Bible. That'll be on tomorrow's broadcast. If you've ever checked out Movie Guide, Family Guide to Movies and Entertainment, that's Ted Baer's organization. So he's going to join us tomorrow. I'm interested to hear what he has to say. And in the second hour today, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Richard Land, who's the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, who wants Christians to know why it is their duty to vote and why he believes this election is the most important since 1860, which goes back to the times of Lincoln. So if someone was coming to you, young person, and they said, okay, give us a key to marriage. We're about to get married, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. What would you say are keys to a successful marriage? Give me your thoughts, excuse me, as we celebrate, Nancy and I, 40 years of marriage today. All right. I want to give a public tribute to my bride of 40 years, and let's see if I can do it without crying. I remember when we met, both 19 years old, 1974, I remember it well. I remember the first conversation we had. Nancy, you were an atheist then. I remember getting your phone number to talk to you, which I did with any new person in the church. I did think it'd be nice to have your number to talk to you, but any new person, I'd get their number to ask if I could call and witness to them. And I remember the conversations we had, the hours we talked. I remember the night you got saved. I remember 1 week later, God bringing us together, and 1 week later, knowing that we were in love and we'd spend the rest of our lives together. And it's been an amazing journey. I wouldn't be who I am today without you. I want to give you public honor and say that I've needed you in my life so desperately to always tell me the truth and not what I wanted to hear, but what I needed to hear. And for having that absolute moral backbone. People think of me as strong person of conviction. I am, but you're much stronger. I don't know any person in the world. I've never met anyone in the world who fears people less than you fear people, and who only wants to speak the truth. In fact, I don't think you know how to speak anything other than the truth. And that moral integrity, that backbone, has been such an extraordinary thing. I mean, our friendship, all the fun things and the memories we have and all the experiences together, you know, being my best friend these many years and just being so unshakably faithful and loyal. I mean, you can't buy that for $1 trillion, and you're as beautiful today as you were the day I met you. I think you're more beautiful today, in fact. So I'm indebted to you in every way. But, you know, that moral integrity is the thing that fuels you, your heart before God, that you can't compromise, that there are no shortcuts, that you know he's real and he's given promises, and if we'll just do what he says, we'll see what he promised. I mean, that's also driven me. And I remember one time, it was decades ago, it was a difficult season that we passed through together. There was a bit of a crisis in the church where we were, and I was part of the leadership, and we had a big vote. And the vote, the whole night changed, and I remember people began to shift positions. By the end of the night, it was 16 against one. I was the one. And the senior leader told me years ago that I was right in dissenting. But I remember saying to myself, how could I go home and look God in the face, so to say, and look you in the face and say I compromised, I sold out because of peer pressure? And that strength has been something inside of me to do what's right. And I've heard your voice in my ears for decades. I'm about to say something foolish. Don't say it. I hear your voice. The times I have said it, I have regretted it. But you've always been there, and you've been so forgiving. And you've been so kind, and when I've done something stupid, you've been so gracious to forgive and to move on together. And all the years I've been on the road, I mean, I spent at least 3 years overseas, and you just bat down the hatch, take care of the kids, make sure everything ran fine. I'll be in India for a month, no problem. And raised our family together. We've got amazing kids and grandkids. And I know you don't like me saying this all the time, but hon, the best is yet to come. Thanks for an amazing 40 years and for being my wonderful, faithful friend, best friend I could ever ask for. Thanks for being there. Thanks for loving me. Thanks for loving God. Thanks for refusing to quit or compromise. We're in this together. All right. Hey, 40 years. I wanted to say that. I wanted to share that. And I know Nancy's busy with the family right now, but I'll make sure she gets to hear that later. 866-348-7884. What would you say, number one, two, three keys for a successful, happy marriage? I asked Nancy that question, and then we had a talk with our two daughters. One lives near here. The other is in town, came in to surprise us with one of our grandkids. And our son-in-law that's here, our other son-in-law, is back in Maryland with our other grandchild. So we've got three of the grandkids here, two daughters, one son-in-law, and one grandkid couldn't make it down there in Maryland. So we went around the room and we discussed this and drew up a little list. But here is the first thing on Nancy's list. The first thing on Nancy's list was marry the right person. Now, you might say, well, that's self-evident. That's redundant. I know there are cultures where marriages are arranged. But in that case, you're relying on the parents to pick the right person for you. But in our culture, where we're picking for ourselves, marrying the right person. You say, well, we all know that. No, hang on. You can marry for the wrong reasons. You can marry just because you're infatuated with somebody. I can't believe she likes me. She's always been the most popular, but you may not really be a match. Wow, that guy, he's so influential. He's got so much money. He's interested in me. And you may not be the right match. Don't marry just because of looks. If you both think the other is repulsive and you can't even look at each other without being repulsed, well, it's unlikely you're going to be attracted to each other in a marriage. But beauty in that sense is skin deep. And there's an inner beauty that's far more important than an outer beauty. And that's what we need to focus on. And as we do, I believe we will be physically attracted to that person that we're drawn to. But listen, you can marry for wrong reasons. You can marry and have contrary callings. You can marry and have contrary values. Thanks, Matt, for those kind words. Just saw that posted. That means a lot to me. Thank you, sir. It really does. Kind words about Nancy and me. You can marry based on superficial commonality. And another thing that came up as we were discussing things with family was be best friends. Look, get to know the person you're going to marry. Spend the maximum time that you can with each other within proper bounds. For example, if you're two single people and one of you has an apartment or something like that, in my view, it's pretty dangerous if you really love each other to spend time alone together in that apartment. There's an excellent chance you'll fall into sexual sin and things like that, but there are plenty of ways you can spend hours together. You know, you could sit at a restaurant together. You could sit at a park together on a bench. You could take walks together, and but you're still in public in that respect. You could sit and talk hours in your car and in the driveway where you're in public. I don't want to say something that would open the door to fleshly sin, but get to know each other. Spend quality time with each other. Don't just get excited in the whirlwind of things and make hasty decisions. Man, we can't hold back. We need to be sleeping with each other, and we're going to keep messing up. We're going to keep fornicating, so we better get married. This way it'll be blessed. You don't just want your sexual relationship to be now legitimate because you're married. This is the person that you're saying before God and man, till death do us part. This is a lifelong commitment. And I remember one of my best friends asking me, one of my best friend at that time, as I was about to get married to Nancy, he said to me, "So are you nervous about this at all? Because that's it. In other words, you're never going to have an opportunity to be with someone else, have another girlfriend, have another possibility. I mean, this is..." Now, he was already married when he asked me that question. I said, "Are you kidding me? I can't wait. And she's my best friend in the world, and we love each other deeply. Now we're going to spend the rest of our lives together. I mean, who would want anything more than that?" Get to know the person. Be best friends first. If you're having constant clashes before you're married, step back and slow things down. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Understand some of our friends listening on WMCA, there was a connection problem earlier today. Not sure what was going on, but so sorry we missed some of you. I gave a tribute to my bride of 40 years as we celebrate our 40th anniversary today, and would love to get your thoughts. What are keys to a successful marriage? If you had to say what, and if you're just tuning in, WEZE, WAVA, and disconnecting, so sorry for the problems that we had earlier. Not sure where the breakdown was, but you may have missed about the first 10, 11 minutes of the broadcast. So again, I'll put the question out for those just turning in. What would you say are the most important keys to a successful, blessed, happy marriage? 866-348-7884. Said Nancy's first words to me when I asked her input, marry the right person, be best friends. And let me make a strong, emphatic point here as a husband, all right? Every man, please listen to me. If you're single, please give me your best ear. If you're married, please give me your even better best ear. Every man listening to me. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. If you want to be blessed, if you want your wife to love you and respect you and honor you, and to submit to your godly leadership. If you want to have a life where there is love flowing, husbands, love your wives. You say, yeah, but that's not everything. It says, wives, respect your husbands, wives, submit to your husbands. I understand that. But I fully believe that if the husband will love his wife, that sets the biggest part of the tone. I fully believe that if the husband will put his wife first, will say, okay, I'm going to honor you. I'm going to put you first. I'm going to put your desires first, your concerns first, that there will be reciprocal love. Now listen, I would do it anyway, even if it didn't produce a reward. I joke with people that when you get married, that's the bride's day, and then thereafter, it's the bride's life. What does it mean on a practical level? What it means on a practical level is, let's say you like the house really warm and your wife likes the house really cool. Then put a sweater on and make the house cool. If you really like this color in the room, but your wife really likes that color, give her that color in the room. That means that if it is something where it is not a convictional matter having to do with sin, where it would be compromised for you to change your view, you put your wife first. Love your wife and give yourself for her. Protect her, nurture her, encourage her, take the responsibility for the spiritual state of the home, take the responsibility for the financial stability of the home. Be a man. Take the responsibility to be a shepherd and priest over the home. And I believe just like a plant, if you water it and give it proper sunlight, that plant will thrive. I believe if you're, look, you're married because you cared for each other enough to be married, right? You're married because you felt you loved each other, wanted to spend the rest of your lives together, okay? And if you got married for wrong reasons, but now you're believers, God will give you grace to make something out of it. Don't say, well, we got married in sin, now we're saved, so God didn't bring us together. No, the moment you made your vows and then you consummated that, God brought you together. God sealed it. Let's just say that. God sealed it at that time. And it's not for you to say, well, I think I married the wrong person. No, no. Now God will give you the grace to make it work. I'm telling you, husbands, if you do this, not just for show, but out of love, because that's your bride, because that's your spouse, you lay down your life for her. You put her preferences first. You don't just think that you're the king. And when you come home, it doesn't matter how busy she's been with the kids. It doesn't matter if she's homeschooling the kids and she's got a six-month-old and a two-year-old, plus an eight-year-old and a 10-year-old. She's homeschooling them. She's cleaning. She's doing the laundry. She's cooking. And you come home and dinner's not ready quite at that moment and you get upset. That's being selfish and immature. Yeah, you had a hard day, but so did she. In fact, switch. Let her go and do your job for a day. All right, may not be something she's able to do, but just give it a try. And you stay home and do her job for a day, and I think you'll gladly keep yours. That honor, that love will produce a reciprocal love and an honor and a respect. So, yeah, she's commanded to honor and respect and submit anyway. But I'm telling you, if you're an honorable, respectable person, it'll go a whole lot better. 866-348-7884K. I'm going to go to the phones in a moment. Before I do, be sure to visit our website. We've got two very important apologetics volumes of mine, Hyper Grace and Authentic Fire. Just a week ago, I was asked to address these issues again on the road in a major church. These come up constantly. These are pressing major issues that come up all the time. These books are eye-opening. They'll equip you. They'll give you an understanding of key truths and key errors in the body today. So take advantage of it. We've reduced the price. Go to AskDrBrown.org to find out more. While you're there, check out our latest videos. If you haven't watched my debate with Theodore Schubert yet with some shocking, distressing things he has to say, check that out. My five-minute message at the Ted Cruz rally yesterday, On with the Revolution. I think you'll be blessed by it. We've been getting great reports from folks who've watched it. Check out my latest article on Donald Trump, Anger and Violence, all on the website, AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. All right, we go to District Heights, Maryland. Johnny, welcome to the Line of Fire.
How you doing today?
Doing well, thanks.
Yes, I think some of the most important ingredients to marriage is God, compromise, patience, and friendship.
Yes, sir. Why don't you articulate on compromise?
Compromise. To me, I believe that one of the basic essentials to marriage is compromise. We go into a relationship with our own set of ideas, likes, and wants. But once you decide to become two being one, you must be with the understanding that you have to compromise some of your likes and wants.
Yes, sir.
Because now you are sharing a like.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it absolutely nailed it. Clear, articulate, nailed it. You're sharing life together. You're going to have to learn to compromise. Thank you, sir, for weighing in.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to the line of fire, 866-348-7884. What are keys to successful marriage? Take some more of your calls in a moment. I did not read Gary Chapman's love language books until, or his main book. I know he's written different ones for different age groups and settings and following through more. But I didn't read the book at all until, oh, I don't know, certainly within the last 6-7 years, I would say. I'm just trying to remember where I was reading it, which meant where we were living at that time. And while it's certainly, people would talk and say, hey, what's your love language? And I didn't know what it meant. I mean, people explained it, but I hadn't read the book. So if you never read his book, what he talks about is that everybody has, quote, a love language that is something that is meaningful to you, that shows love to you. For example, if your love language was quality time, right? Focus quality time. And that's what you wanted. Let's say you're a woman and that's how you felt loved. And your husband, whenever he talked to you, is looking at his cell phone and is distracted and then looks up a little bit. It's like, oh, honey, I'm sorry. Look, I tell you what, let's talk later. And okay, you are going to really struggle. But then he buys you like something really expensive and nice and brings it home and surprises you. You're like, honey, that's fine, but I didn't want that. And he's like, I don't understand. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I just got a promotion on my job so we could move into this neighborhood you really like and so on. She's like, you don't get it. And a lot of times we don't get it because he's trying to show love, but he doesn't realize that for her, love would mean that he sits down and looks her in the eyes and gives her attention and wants to hear what she has to say. And they interact in a fruitful way. She wants to hear what he has to say in an unfocused way. And that's how she experiences love. And somebody else, their love language may be physical affection and praise. And that's what, you know, the focus time, that's fine. But they want a hug and they want good words spoken to them. And for someone else, it could be gifts, you know, that they feel loved. You know, you can be away a lot as long as you come back with a gift. You can be really busy, but when you come home, you got flowers. And that's what matters. So it's important. Before I read the book, I understood on Nancy's end what was important to her. And then you say to yourself, well, why don't you live it out all the time then? And the answer is sometimes we're selfish. You may know what your spouse's love language is, but you might be too selfish to act on it. So there must be this mutual crucifixion of the flesh. Now look, for the most part, if you're married to the right person, it's minor. It's minor. Look, I remember we were first married. The only major adjustment that I remember I had to make was how I kept my toothpaste. I said, are you serious? I mean, we spent a lot of time together before we were married. We knew each other well. We got married. Nancy had just turned 21. I was 2 days shy of 21. In fact, when we went to California, my dad paid for our honeymoon as our gift. We flew to California, went to sign up for the rental car. So we got married on the 14th, flew there on the 15th. I couldn't sign for it because I wasn't 21. Nancy had to sign for the rental car. Yeah, married an older woman. She had just turned 21 and I was about to. So we got married pretty young, right? You know, just 21 years old, basically. But the only major adjustment I remember making was that the way I kept the toothpaste in the bathroom was different than she liked, or it was, you know, it was messy. I remember thinking, okay, that's an adjustment to make. Otherwise, it was just everything was better. Yeah, we had arguments and things like that, and challenges, and people do. But it's really when you put each other first. I'll say this plainly: if you both humble yourselves and put each other first, you can solve every problem in marriage. Every problem.
Fire we plead, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
As Nancy and I celebrate 40 years of marriage today, we are talking with you about keys to a successful marriage. If you've been married for many years and you're thriving, if you've been married a short time and you're thriving, if you went through difficult times and learned from the difficult times, and now you have some positive input, you know, things not to do, give us a call, 866-348-7884. Yeah, it's, you know, when people say, well, we'll live together first. We'll live together. And then this way, let's see. Let's see how compatible we are. We'll pull our resources. We'll sleep in the same bed. We'll have this opportunity first and then see if it works. Then we'll get married. You think, well, that's a better chance, right? It's like test drive the car. As I think Woody Allen once said in the dialogue with Billy Graham about it, test drive the car first before you buy the car. Sounds logical. But it's well known, there's been data for many years from Scandinavian countries where this is very normal. Cohabitation is very normal. I remember being in Scandinavia or Finland and going through an apartment building. I was staying with an older couple and noticing on the door it had two names. You know, instead of it say, you know, the Brown family or the Smith family. It had two names, and they said, oh, yeah, they live together. And that was the great majority of the names on the doors, people living together. You say, well, how's that work out? Poorly, poorly. That when children are brought into the world in that environment, the environment is more unstable. And when people do get married, they have a higher divorce rate. Isn't that interesting? You know, one study I'm looking at here, what does it say? It's called The Ring Makes All the Difference, The Hidden Consequences of Cohabitation and the Strong Benefits of Marriage. Quote, cohabitation. Cohabiting couples have a 50 to 80% higher likelihood of divorce than non-cohabiting couples. There's something about making that commitment to one another first that says we're not, this is not experiment here. That makes a difference. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Atlanta, Maryland. Fuller, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I definitely agree. Ephesians chapter 5, your husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. That's the key. And by the way, congratulations on 40 years. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I've been married 23.
Congratulations.
And it's been a challenge. You said something to the effect of adjustments in marriage will be minor if you're married to the right person. And I'm going to take a little bit of issue with that. In that I think that there's a level of spiritual and emotional health that we are just not aware of when we get married. And so because of that, the adjustments may be minor or they may be huge. The issue is, I think, the commitment that you need to make. And then from there, that the principle that's laid out there in Ephesians 5, as you quoted earlier, I think, then starts to play into, come into play. You referenced Chapman's Love Languages, and there's another book I read a while ago called His Needs, Her Needs. And I think the emotional and spiritual health, and I think we need to just continuously grow as we get married. That's going to be an impact on making it last, because if you're not growing, you're going to stop, and you're going to change. Kids are going to come into the mix. I know for us, that became a change. Health issues come in, and that becomes a change. And before you're married, you've never been tested. It's like a teenager telling me how to raise kids. They have no clue, but they think they do, and I thought I did until I got married. And those first few years for us was terrible. I'll just be frank. It was horrible. But because of the commitment that we made to Christ and to each other, we were able to make it through that those first, I guess, 5 to 7 years. And, you know, and it's a lot better now. But now we're discovering other stuff because we have teenagers. And it's just, it requires, I think, a level of commitment that I don't know if people are serious about. And I think that's, you know, I think that is a very big key. That that commitment, and then the willingness or the wisdom, I guess, to continue to grow as you get older, to constantly learn, to be involved in a healthy church, to be involved with other couples, to take input, just constantly growing to become a better, healthy person emotionally and spiritually.
All right, so let me ask you this, and it's good that listeners hear another perspective. You know, I've heard people say the first year of marriage is hell. It's like, I can't relate to that. Now, we've been through
That's
hellish
awesome.
Attack.
Right. Awesome.
Yeah. But, I mean, many have said that. So it's good that people get the full perspective because, you know, maybe they're going through a tough first 6 months or year or a couple years, and they hear me and they think, what's the matter with me? Then they hear you and think, okay, good.
Right.
There's hope then. There's hope for me.
Let
me just throw this out to you. And a lot of it is personalities, you know, and a lot of stuff comes out you didn't know was there before. Now you're sharing your life together. Now it's not just about you and so on and so forth. And immaturity can come out and selfishness can come out and other issues you didn't know you had because you didn't get there yet. It's almost like, you know, you don't know how you respond in a crisis until you're in the crisis
because
you've never been there before. But would you agree that if couples go into a marriage and divorce is not an option. In other words, that's never. I'm not saying that there are no possible biblical grounds for divorce. You know, and there are victims of divorce here, and they really are the victims. And we pray for healing and restoration and wholeness for them without condemnation. But would you agree that divorce not being an option basically is a key thing for a couple that's going through a hard time making it?
Definitely, I would agree, and that to me is what I meant by the word commitment.
Yes, that's why I asked to flesh that out. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, and so you know, I agree. But for those couples who are having a rough time the first 2-3 years, that's why I talk about the emotional and spiritual health.
Yes,
because
yes,
when I looked in the mirror when I got married, I thought I knew myself. I didn't even know myself, let alone my spouse. So part of that growth factor, you know, when you come from a home, I mean, maybe your parents were wonderful parents. They stayed married and they raised you and your siblings and your wife's parents were, you know, but I'm coming from dysfunction and divorce.
Yeah.
I'm a Black American, so there's all the challenges in the community I grew up in and the violence
yep.
and the drugs. So when you throw other factors in there, that can mess with your esteem. Dennis Rainey talks about, you know, he and his wife Barbara wrote a book a long time ago called Building Your Mate's Self-Esteem. That's the part of that spiritual and emotional health I'm talking about. And so it's people, they want their marriages to last, depending on where they're starting from. But even if you're starting from a good place, you still want to continue to grow. So I think that is a major factor. And like, I'm only halfway where you are, 40 years, that's awesome. I got 23 in. But it's, do believe strongly that we as people trying to follow God, you need to continuously grow. You can't stop.
Absolutely. And everything you're saying in terms of our overall spiritual health, emotional health, that's important. A lot of this can be dealt with good counseling beforehand, where a counselor can really highlight issues and then say, okay, here's how you deal with them. Because
Michael, somebody told us we just shouldn't get married. And then they told us we shouldn't have kids. And then they told us, you know, I mean, when are you at the point, you know, people told us, maybe, and by the way, our kids are adopted. And it's because, well, not totally because we were infertile, but they said, well, maybe God's telling you, you're not ready for kids.
Look, here's what you have to do. Just because there's some bad counsel doesn't mean there's not a lot of good counsel.
I agree.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
I'm just
so let me,
saying
yeah.
that there's a lot of people listening.
I understand. A lot of people with opinions. And that's why, just to jump in here, that's why it's so important for, if you can get good counseling from experienced marriage counselors, you know, in your church, pastor leaders, depending on the size of the church, other godly couples you know, that can flesh out a lot of problems first. Nancy and I had none of that, by the way, but we spent a ton of time together before we were married. But in many churches, they won't marry you till you have that first. And that could flesh the things out so at least you're aware and can deal with them. But interestingly enough, Fuller, I grew up in a very happy household. My mom and dad, happily married, loved each other, a great environment. Nancy's mom was married 4 times, and it was a terribly dysfunctional home she grew up in. Now, our daughters grew up in great homes, and our younger daughter, her husband, he was raised in a good home, but his dad died of cancer when he was just 12 years old, so that was terrible hardship to go through. Our older daughter, they're both happily married, both great husbands. Her husband's mom was married 5 times. He was largely raised by grandparents in the midst of that. So it can be redeemed, just like as you talk about your challenging background. It can all be redeemed. Divorce is not an option. God gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, and there are solutions. Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Okay. When I say divorce is not an option, I'm not saying that there are cases where there are not biblical grounds. Maybe you're listening to me as a wife. Your husband was physically violent to you. He cheated on you 3 different times. He's now living with his girlfriend and refuses to repent and wants a divorce. Yeah, there are biblical grounds, and you could be free to grant him that divorce. Or you could even divorce him and be right in God's sight if reconciliation is impossible. So I'm not saying there are never possible grounds, but I'm saying if both parties of a marriage go in with the mentality, divorce is not an option. If they both go in with that mentality, you can get through anything. Now look, here's a factor I haven't talked about. It's not just your relationship with your spouse, but there are other factors. What about terrible sickness with a child and hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills? What about a child's death? That can bring tremendous trauma and incredible pain and difficulty to a marriage. What about when you get hit with some other disaster in life? And it's got nothing to do with the two of you. You know, your own relationship is great, but you go through hell together. And now you're both under terrible pressure. What if you're about to lose everything? And the only way to keep afloat is that you have to work extra jobs, both of you, in extra shifts. And now the kids are getting unruly because the parents aren't around a lot. And just the environment at home feels like a war zone. I understand there can be tremendously challenging times. And Nancy and I, like every other couple, we've had heavy challenges, be it sickness, be it loss of loved ones, be it terrible financial loss, be it external pressure, be it whatever, you know, over 40 years, you go through a lot. You go through a lot. But if divorce is not an option in your thinking, it doesn't exist in your thinking. It's not like, okay, we won't consider it. It doesn't even exist. It doesn't even exist. And if you'll both humble yourselves before God and one another, my son-in-law Ryan roughly quoted the words of Ruth Bell Graham, Billy Graham's late wife, that you have to be great forgivers, that you're going to fall short in little ways, disappoint each other little ways or sometimes in major ways. But if you'll both humble yourselves, God will give you grace. And if you'll forgive each other from the heart, make the choice to, and God's grace will empower you. You can get through anything. I know people whose marriages were terribly scarred. I mean, moral failure on the part of a spouse, sometimes more than once, or some terrible disappointment in life because of the spouse doing something irresponsibly and costing them terribly. or reputation getting terribly damaged, shameful things happening, but they've made it. They've gone on. In that sense, love overcomes everything. And, you know, I realize at times when we were under maybe the most severe pressure of our lives years ago, that my love for Nancy and her love for me really didn't tie in with emotions. Oh yeah, the emotions are there, and many times over the years, even that early romance is just renewed, you know, that you have that in deep and intense and wonderful ways. But honestly, love is something much deeper. It's something that's there regardless. It's a commitment that's there in the midst of an argument. It's a commitment that's there in the midst of conflict. And it reflects God's persevering love for us. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the phones, Fort Lee, Virginia. Ryan, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I listen to your show all the time. I find a lot of inspiration from it. And I guess what compelled me to call in was kind of a personal testimony with what you said about the selfishness in a marriage.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
My wife and I will be married 6 years on April 1st. And about a year and a half ago, we were at a breaking point. I'm in the military. I've been deployed 3 times, and I deal with PTSD on a regular basis. Because of the way that it makes you think, and, you know, we're both previously divorced. You know, my previous marriage, I gave everything, and it got me to the point where I was done. And I stopped trying to do for others and just did for myself. It wasn't until we had reached that breaking point about a year and a half ago. My wife had left and gone to her family in Illinois, and I was basically left by myself in our house with just me and my dog. And I had reached the point where I was willing to end my life. And it wasn't until I swallowed my pride and took it upon myself to, you know, ask for help that I started realizing, you know, what God really wants in a marriage. And it wasn't until that point that I realized how selfish that I had been.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if you looked at us today, you would have never guessed that we were at that breaking point a year and a half ago.
Praise God.
You know, there have been a lot of challenges. My wife has had a lot of medical issues. She almost severed her spinal cord about 4 years ago.
Oh, my.
In an accident. And now she's having back problems to the point where she's in a wheelchair. And I have realized that, you know, I agree with you. When you give 100% to the other person, your life is a lot more fulfilling. And, you know, we both came to that realization. You know, I deal with my, I guess you'd call them medical issues. And, you know, she deals with hers. But the important thing is we deal with them together,
yeah.
You know.
And in fact, Ryan, I've just got to jump in. What you're saying is so important, but I'm out of time. So let me do this. First, thank you for the kind words, and I'm glad we can be of inspiration. Thank you for your great testimony to the nation. And let's pray, Lord, I ask for healing, physical healing in this couple. Jesus be glorified as their healer and bless them. Amen. My bottom line today, put one another first and your marriage will be blessed. Is it a Christian's duty to vote in America? We'll talk about it today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. This is your host, Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you. Spent the first hour of the broadcast doing something very special. Nancy and I celebrate 40 years of marriage today. 40 years. Remarkable. We met at the age of 19, 1974. We got married in 1976. She had just turned 21. I was 2 days shy of 21. We've been together ever since. Two grown daughters, four grandkids, oldest grandchild 15, youngest 9. So I gave Nancy a special tribute on the air. I posted within the last 24 hours our wedding picture on Facebook and Twitter, getting thousands of likes. So thanks for the kind expression. But I talked the first hour about keys to a successful marriage. Keys to a successful, blessed marriage. So I'm not getting into that now, but by all means, go to the website later today, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Go to the website later today, and you'll be able to listen to that. I think you'll find it very, very helpful if you're about to get married, if you are married, if you plan to get married. I think you'll find it very helpful. We are going to talk, though, more politics, but raising serious Christian questions about the issues. I'm going to be joined by Dr. Richard Land, longtime Southern Baptist leader, now the chancellor of Southern Evangelical Seminary, and a man with a tremendous insight on these issues. The times I've sat down and talked with Dr. Land, the times I've been on panel discussions with him, the times he's been on the air with me, I've been not just blessed, but blown away by his insights, his perspective, his knowledge. So we'll be joined in a couple of minutes. And Dr. Land is going to present the argument that it's a Christian's duty to vote here in America. A Christian's duty to vote in America. So we'll be talking with Dr. Land in a few minutes. And, things are heating up in the campaign in ugly ways. In fact, Dennis, grab clip number 7. Grab clip number 7. Donald Trump has accused Bernie Sanders of organizing the protests Friday night, because of which Donald Trump canceled his rally. The police did not tell him to. That was his choice to do it. He's now threatened to send protesters to the Sanders rallies. It's clear that radical left-wing groups like MoveOn.org and others, and apparently funding by George Soros, they were behind the protests Friday night in Chicago. So these groups, they would hate Senator Cruz, they would hate Senator Rubio, they would hate people like me and you if you're a moral conservative. So make no mistake about it. And of course, I have warned for months, going back to August in writing, warned about the dangerous incendiary rhetoric coming from Mr. Trump. You just can't speak like that and be a presidential candidate or be a president without problems. I've been warning about it. But listen to what Bernie Sanders had to say. Clip number 7.
Some of you may have read just a few hours ago that Mr. Trump said that he is prepared to pay the legal costs of an individual who sucker punched somebody at a recent event. He's going to pay the legal fees of somebody who committed a terrible act of violence. What that means is that Donald Trump is literally inciting violence with his supporters. He is saying, if you go out and beat somebody up, that's okay. I'll pay the legal fees.
Yeah, in fact, not only did Donald Trump say that previously, but this man said, next time I may have to kill him. This is a white guy punching a black guy. Next time I may have to kill him. You don't pay that person's legal fees. You distance yourself from that person. Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We need someone who's more afraid of displeasing God than displeasing people. That person will do what's right for people.
Those are some of my remarks in my almost five-minute message at a rally for Ted Cruz yesterday in Charlotte at the Z Drag Strip right next to the Speedway. We had a great crowd, several thousand people there. Could be as many as 3,000-4,000. But it was a great crowd because the weather was terrible. Right up to the event, it was raining. They said, we're going on, rain or shine. I remember driving there from South Carolina. I had done a debate in the morning in South Carolina. And as I was driving up there, it was heavy rain earlier in the morning, and then cloudy and rainy when I got there, maybe 30 minutes before the rally was going to start. And they had ponchos for people and things like that, and monitors covered with whatever you cover them with to keep them out of the rain, and some kind of tarp or something. And then it just started to clear up. Pastor Mark Harris, as he's praying, just, invoking God's blessing on the meeting. It's like, look at this. My younger daughter Megan was there and commented that she kind of felt like sunlight. Her eyes were closed, felt sunlight. What? This during the prayer. It was a beautiful day. So a couple more hours of rally. The weather held up and great crowd was out there. And listen, let me give you some practical thoughts here. All right? And we'll take your calls. Do you agree with the statement that in America, it is a Christian's duty to vote? In America, is it a Christian's duty to vote? Okay. let me just present something to you. It is a big voting day tomorrow. Big voting day. States like North Carolina, where we had the rally yesterday, and Illinois, and Ohio, and Florida, and Missouri. Very, very big day of voting. Your vote counts, right? Your vote counts. Your vote makes a difference. I just want to encourage this, all right? Please be informed and don't just listen to sound bites. Please be informed. There's so much rhetoric. There are so many different opinions flying around. There are so many false accusations that are out there. In fact, I wrote an article that was posted on the stream, stream.org, over the weekend. And I was basically saying in the article, look, there's no excuse for ignorance. There's no excuse for ignorance. And these days, we can do some fact-checking online. So here's what prompted me to write this article. Are you ready for this? Here's what's prompted me to write. It's called, Here's How to Phony News Proof Yourself. This was posted on my Facebook page. Dr. Brown, would you please investigate and address the YouTube videos where the father of Ted Cruz is advocating non-Christian and atheistic internment camps with plans for them to be established in California and Vermont. I do not understand how a true Christian could advocate something like that. So I replied, you said, well, did you investigate first? I don't need to investigate that. I don't need to investigate something that is absolutely 100% false on the very surface of it. I replied with four question marks, complete, utter nonsense and rubbish. And I was like, what? Complete, utter nonsense and rubbish. Who in the world is circulating ridiculous stuff like this? Three question marks. Now, someone then posted the background to it. There is a website called Newslow that was a news/satire website. In other words, what it had was first, it was it would have actual news weaved in, and then complete satire. So it would have some words that someone said, and then other things completely made up, and it would actually tell you on the website which was which. Of course, most people wouldn't know that. Oh, look at this. You say, well, Mike, how did you know without even checking it was bogus? Well, let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question. If someone said to you, you're a married man, and someone said, could you look into the rumor that your wife has been an Elvis Presley impersonator for the last 30 years and that she has thousands of YouTube videos up all over the internet from 40 different countries? No, I don't need to investigate that. I know Nancy's not been to 40 different countries, and I know that she's not an Elvis impersonator. You say, but hang on. But this is about Rafael Cruz, and you've met him a few times and talked to him, but I mean, you don't know him like that. But here's what I do know. I've heard the man speak. I've had him on my radio show. I've sat with him face-to-face over lunch. And I know that he would renounce these words as complete and utter and absolute nonsense. Okay? Let's go a step further. Let's go a step further. All right? If this was true, and it goes back to 2013, this would have been blasted by the news media for years. So aside from simple fact checks, you get online and you find out, is this true or is this not true? Now, sometimes there's debate. And well, it could be this, could be that. But for example, I just saw an article that said that one group tracked Donald Trump's speeches for 5 hours straight over the weekend. 5 hours straight. And they found I think it was just under 5 hours, maybe 4.7 hours. They found he averaged one complete false statement or exaggeration or misleading statement every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes. You know, for example, one would be, we don't make money exporting anywhere. We're losing money to every country on exports. Well, actually, it's exaggerated. We make money exporting to this country. Our trade deficit with China has been $500 billion a year for X number of years. Well, it's actually been 360. No, it's sizable. It's sizable, but exaggerated. Or Made in America. You don't see Made in America anymore. You just don't see it. You don't see it. Well, they checked and said there are actually $2.7 trillion of merchandise sold in America every year that's made in America. $2.7 trillion, if I remember the figures. Anyway, it's pretty easy to check. During a debate, Ted Cruz says this, John Kasich says this, Marco Rubio says this, Donald Trump says this, Bernie Sanders says this, Hillary Clinton says this. Okay, what's accurate, what's not? Sometimes it's a bit of a spin, and it's a bit debatable. But other times, it's clear, it's black and white. Get the facts. You know how many people ask me, what about Ted Cruz believes in this dominionist theology? And Ted Cruz wants to, you know, take over. He believes if he have a Christian presidency, he'll take over the world. Oh, gosh. Well, let me tell you, it's bigger than that. He has a conspiracy with Mars, with Martians. And see, he's not just funded by the Illuminati. He's funded by Martian Illuminati. Oh, I've never disclosed this publicly before. And you see, with the Martian Illuminati, what's happening is that he's going to take over the whole universe. And a little sarcasm there. I'm a New York Jew. Sarcasm runs in my blood, okay? All right, little sarcasm. But friends, hear me. People believe all kinds of nonsense instead of taking the time to find out what someone actually believes. The information is readily available where candidates stand on key issues. There are scorecards. There are family groups that make these things available. So please take the time. All right, we have connected with Dr. Land. We've only got a minute before our break here, so we'll come back to Dr. Richard Land on the other side of the break. So look, whoever you're voting for, make sure it's based on truth. Make sure it's not based just on emotion. Think the issue through, because you are participating in the process of voting for, in the natural, the most powerful person in the world, the most powerful office in the world, the person who could well be appointing several Supreme Court justices that could affect the direction of America for a generation. So act wisely, act responsibly, and take advantage of this sacred opportunity. I say sacred because it's a privilege that much of the world has never had through world history and doesn't have today. All right, we actually have still not connected with Dr. Land, but we'll be back, 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We don't need a provocateur in chief who will appeal to the worst fears and anger of Americans. We need a commander in chief. We need someone who will do what he says and say what he'll do. Don't vote for someone based on who you hope they will one day become. Vote for someone based on who they are and what they've already done.
Those are some of my remarks again at the Ted Cruz rally. Can I just talk to you from my heart? Everybody listening in every voting state that's going to be voting tomorrow, please listen to me as carefully as you can, all right? I never before endorsed a political candidate, and I don't know that I will in the future again. All right. Of course, the future's in God's hands that we live and breathe tomorrow. But from my perspective, I've never done it before. I don't know that I would do it again. You say, why aren't you sure if you do it again? And why did you do it this time? I'm not sure I'd do it again because it would take a particular kind of candidate in order for me to endorse. Because otherwise, it's not worth it. Why is it not worth it? Because once you give an endorsement, you're now associated with that candidate for better or worse. So if the candidate does something wrong, your name gets sullied with it. If the candidate says something debatable, you're now held responsible for it on some level. I mean, people know you're not responsible for it. It's like, hey, that was your man. That was your man. What happened? That was your candidate there. The other thing is that when you do speak up and speak out, You are judged through a certain grid, okay? You're judged through a certain grid. So, for example, when I write articles, and it's been quite a few, sounding alarm against Donald Trump. Look, read my latest one, Donald Trump Anger and Violence. Take a minute to read it, regardless if you're a Trump supporter or not. Please take a minute to read it. And before you read it, if you're upset with the title or upset with me, just ask God to calm your heart. Ask yourself, have I been warning about this? Can I now say I told you so, beginning in August of last year? But see, here's the problem. Here's the problem. When I raise these issues, people will say, oh, well, you're just raising because you're a Cruz supporter. No, Ted Cruz wasn't in the race at all. My issues with Donald Trump remain just as deep. So here, this is what I wrote last August in my open letter to Donald Trump. Last August, friends, I said, why shoot yourself in the foot when you have a legitimate chance of becoming the president of the United States? Proverbs 15:1 says, a gentle answer deflects anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. I continued, I'm not a defender of Fox News or Megyn Kelly or some others whom you've attacked. But if you spoke the truth with civility, stating your viewpoint plainly and without equivocation, but without the gutter-level attacks, you'd make a whole lot less enemies. Are you going to argue with me? Were these not words of wisdom because they're based on scriptural wisdom? Can anyone argue with me that this was not a good warning, that Donald Trump could be just as strong, just as politically incorrect, without being gutter, without being demeaning, without being vulgar? I wrote this in December. The scriptures teach that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Luke 6:45. And so Trump's consistent pattern of reckless speech points to deeper issues which could make him unfit for the office of the presidency. I added, the warnings in Proverbs are strong. Quote, do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Proverbs 29:20. Quote, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. Proverbs 29:11. Today, we're seeing some of the negative fruit of Mr. Trump's irresponsible and incendiary rhetoric, and things could get much worse in a hurry, especially when he continues to make provocative comments. Like what? Well, how about during the day on Friday? This is hours before the Chicago protest. And again, the Chicago protest, largely the work of left-wing radicals, MoveOn.org and others, and they'd oppose me radically. They try to shut down other people's meetings. I understand that. So they're responsible for their wrong actions and their intolerance. But only hours before, as people were being escorted out of a Trump rally, and he had to wait while the police escorted them out, he said, he's unhappy with this, part of the problem and part of the reason it takes so long is no one wants to hurt each other anymore, and they're being politically correct the way they take them out, so it takes a little longer. No one wants to hurt each other anymore? And they're being politically correct the way they take them out, so it takes a little longer? That's a bad thing that the police are not mishandling people? If you've got a nonviolent protester, it's a bad thing that they're not getting violent with the person? That is dangerous rhetoric. How about this previous comment? If you see somebody getting ready to throw a tomato, knock the CRAP out of them, would you? Seriously, okay, just knock the hell, I promise you. I will pay for the legal fees, I promise, I promise. That's dangerous rhetoric. I warn about it. It has nothing to do with Senator Cruz. It has nothing to do with my political position. It has to do with my righteousness position, with my burden as a servant of the Lord. So, look, throwing a tomato, that's hardly a deadly or dangerous weapon. Knock the CRAP out of them? So here's a guy, sucker punches, a white guy, 78-year-old white guy, sucker punches a young black man being escorted out of the building at a rally, what, a week and a half ago? Sucker punches, of course, gets arrested for what he did. And when he gets out of being booked in jail, he says, next time I may have to kill him. Donald Trump says, I'm looking into paying the man's legal fees. Want to see what happened? Watch the video. But look, he loves America. He doesn't like what's happening. What? No, you just denounce that and renounce that and apologize for incendiary comments. Another rally as a protest was being out. Trump lamented he wasn't closer. Quote, I'd like to punch him in the face. I tell you. Oh, now you're going to get one of his followers is going to punch somebody in the face. That's dangerous and irresponsible. What happens when you're the president and you say stuff like that? What? Look, a young guy disrupts his meeting. He had no intention for what he says of being violent, but he disrupts the meeting. Of course, it's wrong. It's illegal. I utterly deplore it. I denounce it. Absolutely. What he did is absolutely wrong. Now he's on TV giving interviews. I deplore that as well. You don't make the guy into a celebrity. But somebody puts out this ridiculous video and they add ISIS music in the background and put Arabic captions on. And Trump says, I think the guy's connected with ISIS. The guy's got no connection to ISIS. He's some college protester. Some white guy, college protester, never left America. He's got no more connections to ISIS than you do. When Trump's confronted with that, he goes, I just know what I saw on the internet. What happens when the president of the United States making statements like that? And he's talking about dealing with ISIS. Quote, we have to play the game the way they're playing the game. You're not going to win if we're soft and there. They have no rules. No, you don't beat ISIS by becoming like ISIS. You can instill fear in the hearts of your enemies and be a great military power without playing the games the way the terrorists do. So I'll continue on this in a moment.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I hesitate to say this because I really don't like to disparage public officials, but Donald Trump is a pathological liar.
That's Bernie Sanders. Oh, my, are things heating up. Oh, my, are they heating up. And in most cases, there's more heat than light. And if that's what the leaders are saying, if that's what the presidential candidates are saying, you know it's immediately fueling the fires of the followers who are often going to be less responsible. It's getting ugly out there. It's getting very ugly. And the candidates need to step as high as they can, air their differences plainly. Air their differences plainly. Now, look, I am absolutely not a Bernie Sanders supporter. This is Michael Brown, 866-34-TRUTH. And in point of fact, we have been celebrating a very special day today, March 14th, 1976. 40 years ago, Nancy and I got married. Met at 1974, got married in 1976. Nancy was an atheist when we met. Her mom had been married four times. I've been saved about 2.5 years, came from a wonderfully happy household. God brought us together. 1 week after God saved her, God brought us together. And we've been together ever since, best friends, and loving each other through thick and thin. I honor her. I love her. The joy of my life. So we spent the first hour talking about keys to a successful marriage, and then this second hour have just focused in on politics, and now focusing in particular on the rhetoric and the campaigns. Listen, I am absolutely to the core opposed to Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. I've posted this. I've said it many times. I've posted it. I do not see how you can be a real follower of Jesus and support a pro-abortion, pro-homosexuality candidate. You might say, well, those are the Democrats, the Republicans, they're going to get us into war unnecessarily. Maybe. Maybe. However, many wars are just and can be justified. Many wars, you take out an evil power, an evil party, because they're going to kill more people. It was a just war to take down the Nazis, for example. It was a just war to take them down. If not, many more millions of people would have died in World War II if we did not take them down. And the consequences for the world thereafter could have been absolutely disastrous for many years to follow. So a war can be justified. You minimize civilian casualties, but you are taking out an enemy. If you didn't take out the enemy, many more civilians would die. So you're saving life. Abortion is not saving life. We're not talking about the rarest of the rare case where the mother's dying in childbirth. We're not talking about that. We're talking about 99.999% of all abortions. You're not saving life in the process. You're not saving life in the process. So you can't compare the two. You can't compare the two. But even so, if I knew one candidate is a warmonger and they are going to lead us into unnecessary war, and the other candidate is pro-abortion, then I couldn't vote for either if I thought one was going to lead us into unnecessary war and there'd be all kinds of casualties because of it. Because either way, I'm saying yes to the shedding of blood, and I have to be accountable for my vote. All that being said, Donald Trump is responsible in particular for the extremely high toxicity of this campaign, for the level of hatred and vitriol and insult. And he needs to modify his words. He needs to modify his words or more people are going to get hurt. Yes, the protest Friday night, that was the work of radical leftist, radical left-wing organizations. And in that particular case, yes, we understand who they are and what they stand for. But when Bernie Sanders says what he says, to an extent, I don't think he's overstating. I'm sad to say. I've been observing. I've been listening. I don't think he's overstating.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, is it right to endorse a candidate? Is it right to endorse a candidate as a pastor, as a religious leader? I'm a ordained minister of the gospel, of course, for decades, been preaching since 1973. I'm heavily involved in all kinds of ministry. On the radio, we talk about all kinds of issues, be it interpreting the scripture, theological controversies, being it sharing the gospel with Muslims and Jews, being it social issues. To me, it's all overlapping in that respect. We live in this world, and we have an impact on this world for better or for worse. But here's the downside to endorsing a candidate. Billy Graham endorses Richard Nixon, the one and only candidate he endorsed. Well, now Nixon's not upright, or Nixon has a failure or whatever. Now Billy Graham's name is tarnished with it. And as I said in the last half hour, and by the way, we were going to be speaking with Dr. Richard Land today. Somehow we were unable to connect. Must be a scheduling error. We had everything confirmed right before the show, but in any case, trust all is well. And I was really interested to hear his thoughts and insights because he was going to present the argument, and he's an eloquent, brilliant man. There'd be a lot behind it. He was going to present the argument that it's a Christian's duty to vote in America. So we won't be able to get into that with him today, but there's another downside to endorsing a candidate, which is, let's say I was a liberal and I endorsed Bernie Sanders, but then I was really critical of Hillary Clinton and the email scandal. Well, now people would think, well, I'm just criticizing Hillary Clinton because I'm for Bernie Sanders, right? So in real life now, because I endorsed Senator Ted Cruz, and I was one of the early ones to do it, just felt I was supposed to do it. I'd never endorsed anyone before. That not only are you now tied in with the person's campaign for better or for worse, right? You hope for better, but for better or for worse. But because I've been so burdened to raise my voice and speak my concerns about Donald Trump as a president, because of that, people will say, well, you're just doing it because you're a Cruz guy. I'm anything but a Cruz guy. I'm a nobody's guy except a God's guy in that respect. That's where my allegiance is. And if I've ever taken issue with something in a Cruz campaign, if that came up, that would be something I would communicate directly. Or I would say publicly, I was disappointed in this. I would say it. And if I like something Marco Rubio says, I'm free to quote it. If I like something another candidate said, I quote it. If I like something Donald Trump said, I'd quote it. Okay? Because I'm still going to call it like I see it in that respect and be as impartial as I can be. But there's the downside that when I do raise my voice in concern, I fully understand. People will think, well, you're doing it just because you support Senator Cruz. It's not true, but I fully understand if people see it through that grid, and that's okay. I understand that's only fair. And you might say to me, Mike, you just don't see your own biases. Well, it's true with all of us. Okay, fair enough. We do our best to be objective, but we can't see our own biases or blind spots sometimes without introspection, prayerful thought before God, and without insight and input from others. But let me tell you why this time I endorse the candidate when I never have before. Because I have, as I said at the Cruz rally yesterday, no faith in the political establishment. I'm not a registered Republican. I'm an independent. Okay, I'm a registered independent. But in recent elections where I have voted, it's been overwhelmingly Republican because of the extreme Democratic platform, pro-abortion, pro-homosexual, weak on Israel. And then there are other areas I have differences too. I can't vote for them, possibly. It wouldn't matter. If it was one of them versus the worst possible candidate on the other side, I'd just have to sit it out. Could not in conscience vote for any of those candidates. But I'm just telling you, in my gut, I cannot identify fully with a party. It's fine if you do. I'm not saying you can't, although I have a massive issue with identifying with the Democratic Party for the reasons I said, because you're saying, I identify. Go ahead, more shedding of blood of babies in the womb. Go ahead, more redefining marriage and pushing forward gay activism to the threat of religious liberties, freedoms, and yeah, absolutely. And be weak on Israel. Go ahead, I'm standing with you. I can't understand a Christian doing that. And I'll gladly have Christians on that can debate me about that with joy. If you're a leader, pastor, leader, or have some influence, and you believe that a Hillary or Bernie candidate is the right one and you voted for Barack Obama, we'll have a friendly debate about it on the air, all right? Only with the condition that we're free to offend each other. In other words, let's tell the truth. Let's get it out. And if you feel I'm judging you and I feel you're judging me, we'll get it out as leaders, as mature leaders. Not in the nasty way, but in an honest way. So people can learn, and I can learn, you can learn. Fair enough? All right, so I'm just telling you, I have no faith in the political establishment. The Democratic establishment is something I'm not even dealing with because I'm not a Democrat. The Republican establishment is something I've thought about because I voted Republican, largely, for several cycles. And I do not believe that we can bring about the changes we want or get the right congressional action on key things or have our country go in the right direction to the extent it depends on the president. To the extent it depends on the president. I don't believe we can do that without going against the political establishment. So I'll speak to the Republican establishment. I've warned about it for years. I have written articles asking, should we have a third party? I've put these things out, okay? They're on the table. In other words, if we just get more establishment candidates like John McCain and Mitt Romney, do we bolt? Do we say, okay, we're all sitting out this election? Yeah, we lose it to the Democrats. I understand. We're sitting out this election, and either Republican establishment's coming down, or there's going to be a third party raised up, and it may take a cycle or two, but then we can turn the tide. I've asked these questions honestly. I've put them out. So to me, the candidate that had first checks off before I even think about them. They have to check off on my strong moral conservative values, pro-life, pro-family, pro-Israel. This is my grid, okay? Before the Lord, it's my grid. Check those off first. Now, they have to be able to be a good president in other ways. In other words, they have to have a good understanding of economy and security and other things like that, okay? So check those off first. And then, okay, are they willing to take on the establishment? Are they able to take on the establishment? Because, look, I'm a political outsider. I don't have all these inside Washington connections. Yeah, I mean, I have access to certain people here and there, but I'm a political outsider. I'm not a D.C. guy, okay? I've never walked the halls of Congress and stuff like that. I don't know the insider's game. But I imagine it's really, really powerful. I imagine once you get in that the establishment's like, this is how we do it, and this is how we've always done it. So the one person that I knew who took on the establishment in ways that were so extreme, I thought this guy would never have a chance of being president unless God was with him. And here he is, you know, in a great position. Ted Cruz was the guy that there's a checklist on the moral conservative issues. Now, it's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump does not have that history of being a strong pro-life, pro-marriage conservative. Okay? He simply doesn't have that history. And if he becomes our president, man, I hope he's the greatest president we ever had. I hope he has a radical conversion experience. I hope he'll be amazing if that happens. I really would. Why wouldn't I? All right. I'd rather my warnings were all wrong and that he did good for our country and that my warnings were right. I do not like years later after sounding the alarm about things having to say, I told you so. I don't like that. Well, Dr. Brown, that vindicates your position. I would rather be wrong and have everybody blessed and happy. Then my warning came to pass, right? I mean, if you're warning someone, don't text and drive, don't text and drive, don't text and drive, then they get in an accident and they're crippled, you don't want to say, I told you so. You don't want that. So that remains my heart. But Ted Cruz is the one guy. I've never seen anybody do it. That's taken on the establishment. That's why he's so hated in Congress. When over the weekend, there were caucuses. I don't know if you know about it. So he beat Trump in Wyoming like 68% to maybe 7%, and then in D.C., he and Trump came in last. Trump was third, he was fourth, and Rubio and Kasich came in first, second. But Ted Cruz joked that was a victory for him. That was a victory to come in last in D.C. because that was, you know, insider politics to him, you know. So it was just a joke, but he laughed about it. That's why I endorsed him. In other words, if he was just another candidate, even a fine candidate, for me, the whole politics thing is just too messy, and I can't get my hands soiled with it. But I felt this is the only time I've seen we got a guy like him. Far from perfect. None of us are. But a guy that give his word and keep it, no matter what it costs, and go against the establishment. I thought, that's worth getting involved with. Maybe I can be of help. Does that make sense to you? All right, question about Ben Carson endorsing Donald Trump. I want to take it. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Let me strongly encourage you, get out and vote tomorrow. If you live in North Carolina, Illinois, Florida, Ohio, Missouri, get out and vote. Be informed. Don't just go with the frenzy towards any candidate. Be informed. You say, well, Dr. Brown, you've endorsed Ted Cruz. I'm telling you, get informed. You have my recommendation. Get informed. Think through the issues. Get online. Find out where people really stand. Step back and ask God for wisdom. And then go ahead and vote. All right? It's important that we do it. And if for some reason, in good conscience, you can't vote at all, that's between you and God. But I think we do have clear choices. And there are right choices we could make. And we're brothers and sisters in Jesus, despite differences we might have. And look, I'm going to do what I feel is right because I've never tried to be politically correct or play to the crowds. I've tried to honor God and do what I felt was right, regardless of cost or consequence. It's going to be the same with politics, with taking a stand on these issues. Fair enough? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to John in Mint Hill, North Carolina. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. You know, I just caught your discussion as I was traveling here, and I can really relate to Cruz. I served as a mayor in a town here in North Carolina, and I was hated too for all the same reasons. I believed in the Constitution. I believed in the principles on which this country was founded, and I understood how government was supposed to be operating, and none of those things play with at whatever level it is. The government is utterly corrupt and self-serving. But what I want to tell you is I was surprised that Ben Carson endorsed Trump. My wife was standing in the living room when we saw this on TV, and her mouth was wide open, like I couldn't believe it, and she was staring at the TV. But I heard him, a comment he made on TV today on a morning show as to why he endorsing Trump. And he said that first that, you know, Trump really loved America. And secondly, that he's a lot smarter than people think. He's very cerebral and understands things. And third, that he has some level of interest in spiritual things. And that was his three part as to why he endorsed. Sounded pretty shallow to me, but,
Let me say this, and again, you served as a mayor. That's something I've never done, so that's very interesting. But very quickly, number one, I was very surprised and disappointed with Dr. Carson doing it. All the things that seemed important to him in terms of integrity, in terms of godly convictions, in terms of tone, that seems to be thrown out the window with the Donald Trump. You know, the fact he really loves America, Trump does. Do you have to say that about a candidate? Don't we assume someone running? I mean, you're gonna say that? You know, here, your daughter comes home and wants you to meet her, you know, someone she's really serious about. Dad, I want you to meet him and get to know him. I want your approval. And she said, and look, he doesn't believe in beating up women. It's like, So, I mean, that's a bit of a surprise. And then the other statements I've seen in writing from Dr. Carson, one was that that Ted Cruz was a second choice, but he's too polarizing a figure. Donald Trump is a far more polarizing figure in that respect. And then the next thing was that he just didn't think that Cruz could bring in enough outside from the hardcore conservative, and that Trump could bring in more potential votes. Well, the two big problems with that: one, it's factually incorrect. In a head-to-head, Cruz versus Trump, Cruz overwhelmingly beats him in every poll I've seen. And then in almost all polls for months, Cruz beats Hillary, Rubio beats Hillary, Kasich beats Hillary, and Trump loses to Hillary. And then the other thing is, what kind of pragmatism is that? It reminds me of this old story of a guy that was on his hands and knees under a street light looking for something. And the guy walking by says, "Hey, mister, you lose something?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "You want me to help you look for it?" He goes, "Yeah." He said, "What'd you lose?" He said, "Oh, this watch. It was like a family watch. I lost it." And he said, "You lost it here?" He goes, No, I lost it down the block, but the light's better here." I mean, that's the same kind of thing that, okay, I question the guy's values. I question this, but I think he can get elected. No, how about endorsing the candidate that shares the values? So, yeah, that concerned me for those reasons. Hey, John, thanks for your stand, and thanks for calling in. I do appreciate it. Let's go to Cary, North Carolina. Joanne, time is short. Dive right in.
Hey, this is Jill. I'm in North Carolina. I'm listening to your show. And, I just was wondering how exactly you factor your religious beliefs in when deciding a candidate who best suits the majority of Americans.
Yeah, basically, my religious beliefs make me understand that God's ways are best, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So let me explain. I believe if we have a culture that esteems life, it'll be a far healthier culture. In other words, if we have a pro-life culture,
I
believe...
I respect that, but is it
right.
that
so
you
me
would like to see people adapt to your belief?
No. That's up to every individual. The president, the Congress, their rule is not to enforce religion on people.
Absolutely.
But we all... Right, so I'm 100% convinced that if we strengthen marriage, which is a man and woman together for life, if we have incentives to strengthen that and a culture Joanne, tell you what, just a little hint, little hint. On a radio show, if you ask a question of the host, you have to let the host answer. All right, so here, I'm voting. I'm convinced that marriage is a union of a man and a woman, and it's in the best interest of the country to reinforce that, and that redefining marriage is in our worst interest. So I'm going to vote accordingly. Now, you might say, love is love. Love wins. I have the right to marry the one I love. So my partner and I are lesbians. We should have the right to marry. Then you vote for that. You vote for that. Those are your beliefs. You might come to those as an atheist. You might come to those by going to some Unitarian church. Doesn't matter. We all come to vote, and our beliefs shape our worldview. Whether you're an atheist, whether you're a Buddhist, a Hindu, a Mormon, a Jew, or a Muslim, or a fundamentalist, or Christian, whatever. We all have our views, and then we vote because we think that our views are right. And therefore, we vote accordingly with the hope that we can now advocate for those views in the public square, and that we can elect a leader who will stand for those. I want someone that's strong on national security. I want someone that's strong on the economy. These are different values, right? How we fall on immigration and things like that. We discuss them, and then we vote our conscience. And however you come to your conclusion, through religious beliefs or non-religious beliefs or a mixture, that's your business. Now you vote accordingly, and then we elect people. And we live with it and do our best in the midst of it. Maybe we'll have a conversation another day when we have more time. Friends, be sure to visit my website. Lots of new articles, videos, and special resource offer this week. My bottom line today, it's our job to get involved and make a difference. Voting is a big part of it.